From WHQR Public Media in Wilmington, North Carolina, this is Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. The news of a band of protesters pulling down Silent Sam last week launched another round of emotional debate over the handling of Confederate monuments. University of North Carolina Chapel Hill Chancellor Carol Folt says the eyes of the nation are upon her institution and that she and her board of trustees are now charged with finding a lawful, lasting way to protect the monument by November 15th. Duke University History Department officials have asked Julian Carr's name be removed from their building at Duke, the building that houses their department. In the same week, the North Carolina Historical Commission passed three resolutions regarding the state's handling of Confederate monuments that stand at Union Square on Capitol grounds in Raleigh. Governor Roy Cooper had called for the relocation of the monuments to Bentonville Battlefield, a historic site. He petitioned the state commission to give him the authority to do that. In response, the commission formed a committee last September to study the issue. The resolutions agreed to on August 22nd by that body do not order the removal or relocation of the three monuments. Instead, they call for more signage to provide historic context, more monuments to people of African American heritage, and they urge the Democratic governor and the Republican-controlled legislature to work together on the effort. Today, we'll take a deeper dive into those resolutions, the statements of those on the study committee, and the discussions that led up to them. With us today, David Ruffin. He is chairman of the North Carolina Historical Commission, and he chaired the Confederate Monument Study Committee. He was appointed by Governor Roy Cooper in 2017. David Ruffin, welcome to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel.
Chris Fonville also served on the five-member study committee. He is also a member of the State Historical Commission, appointed by Governor Pat McCrory in 2014. And he is now Professor Emeritus of American History at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. Professor Chris Fonville, welcome back to Coastline.
Thank you, Rachel. It's nice to be here.
Good to have you here. And Monica Gisolfi is an Associate Professor of History, also at UNCW. She is working on a book that tells the story of the Civil Rights Movement through the experience of African-American farmers in the American South as they fought for economic justice. Professor Monica Gisolfi, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Good to have you here. And we're inviting you to join the conversation. What do you think should happen to the Confederate monuments in Union Square? Are the efforts to expunge Confederate monuments from public spaces misguided attempts to erase history? Are these movements long overdue? You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us today at coastline@whqr.org. David Ruffin, one of the Commission's resolutions that I referred to in the introduction states that members of the commission don't feel as though they have the authority to order the removal or the relocation of the Confederate monuments. And this has been a head-scratcher for some. There's some debate over whether the commission really has the authority.
Right. Well, there was a kind of a binary up or down request embedded in the first directive towards us to either keep them up or relocate them. There's also a backdrop of that kind of binary dichotomy that the polar opposites were shouting at each other over this very contentious issue. We felt like as a study group and as a commission as a whole, we needed to take a little more deliberative approach to it, which meant that we needed to seek out legal and professional academic opinions. And then that led, frankly, to a more nuanced suggestion or recommendation. But yes, there was some technical belief among most of us on the commission and the study group that the current law of 2015 specifically limited, very limited. It was in layman's terms, it was basically in two areas. One, the protection of the monuments themselves, and then the so-called relocation to an area of like prominence. And those two standards made it, I think, difficult for us to say that we could, in the face of that, just easily remove or replace the monuments.
And you said you sought a number of expert opinions on this,
yes.
Legal opinions included.
Yes.
And it is, when the statute itself says except as otherwise provided, a monument, memorial, or work of art owned by the state may not be removed, relocated, or altered in any way without the approval of the Historical Commission. That sounds to a layperson like it's up to that commission.
Right. Well, there was no question that I think all of us realized that, if I'm answering your question, that unless you came out to the satisfaction of the polar opposites, that there would be either confusion or some sense that you've just punted on this issue. And I do think, quite in all due respect to the general public, I'm very proud of where we came out. I think we had a deliberative process. We represent, even in our study committee, a very diverse political opinions and ideological opinions. And we wanted very much, frankly, in this era that we live in, and the very toxic politics, we wanted to address the broader base of the citizenry of this state that I honestly don't think camp out at the polar opposites. And that's what we feel, I think, good about, that we came with a reasoned compromise. And, you know, one of the things we did to counter the the monument stay was to really come at it from a very, very strong condemnation of the current imbalance of the Confederate monuments, and then to post haste rectify that imbalance.
Since your commission passed those resolutions last week, what have you heard from the public about this? Do you think that you've been hearing from the extremes on both sides of this? Because you even noted in your statement about this that there are sides in the debate that just won't be satisfied with a moderate approach.
Well, to be very personal about it, I've got liberal friends who haven't spoken to me. I think that's occurring probably on the other end. If you don't satisfy in this environment the kind of very binary, you know, either you rule in my favor or you don't, then there's very little fuel in the middle. But again, as I've said to my colleague here, Chris Vonville, I can certainly be at peace with what we did.
And just one more, I want to go to Chris Vonville about the lengthy and excellent editorial that he wrote this morning that's in the Star News. But
thank you.
But finally, what would you say then to your liberal friends that aren't speaking to you now? What's the one message that you'd like them to really understand?
The message I have is, if we just continue on this process by just saying, okay, I won and you lost, then that just preserves this toxicity and this poison about this issue. I would like them to at least consider all of the things we suggested to be done to rectify this imbalance and to recontextualize even the memorialization of the Confederacy.
Professor Chris Vonville, this editorial that is in today's edition of the Star News kind of lays out the complexity also of the commission's decision, the history of the monuments, and your own experiences in this process. So now you speak to David Ruffin's liberal friends and talk about the feelings of the people who oppose the people who really expected the commission to determine that the monuments needed to be moved or just taken down. What is it about the monuments that you find such value in, historically and personally?
Well, personally, the monuments are a part of our history.
And when you say ours?
The states, mm-hmm. Yeah, the people of North Carolina. They were put up in Capitol Square between 1895 and I think 1912. The three monuments, the tall obelisk to the Confederate war dead from North Carolina, the statue to Henry Lawson Wyatt, who was the first Tar Heel soldier killed in action during the war, and then the monument to the women from North Carolina of the Confederacy. And to me, they have become a part of our history. I recognize the symbolism that they hold for people who want to see them taken down. There is no question, Dr. Chisolfi and I are in agreement on this, that the principal cause of the Civil War was slavery. Mm-hmm. Had slavery not existed, there would not have been the number of compromises that there were between 1787 and 1860. The war would not have happened. The Confederacy would not have been established. So I understand the sensitivity of that, because to people who want to see them taken down, they do represent slavery. And look at the Confederate Constitution. I mean, it mentions the word slavery directly and by word 9 times. So there was no question that the Confederacy was established in large part to protect and defend slavery in perpetuity. So to many people, they represent slavery.
What do they represent? What do they represent to you?
That they are a part of our history. I did have ancestors who fought for the Confederacy. For many people, it's as simple as that. It's recognition of their service to the Confederacy. To others, the high sense of duty that Southerners felt to defend their families and their homes and their states against the Union. To many veterans, they're simply war memorials to American servicemen and women. And indeed, the U.S. government to this day recognizes Confederate soldiers as American fighting men and provides gravestones at taxpayers' expense for them in private and public cemeteries and graveyards.
And
well, we can come back to that.
Yes, we can. You're listening to Coastline on 91.3 and 98.9 FM. We're learning about the State Historical Commission's recent resolutions regarding the future and treatment of the Confederate monuments in Raleigh. We have two members of the State Historical Commission with us today and a UNCW history professor. And we want to hear from you. Is relocating or removing them tantamount to erasing history? You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138. Email us at coastline@whqr.org. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. You're listening to Coastline. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. Today, it's an exploration of Confederate monuments in public spaces in North Carolina. With us to answer your questions on this Wednesday, David Ruffin. He's chairman of the North Carolina Historical Commission, UNCW American History Professor Emeritus Chris Fonville, and also a member of the State's Historical Commission, and Monica Gisolfi, Associate Professor of American History at UNCW. If you'd like to ask your own question on this Wednesday, you can call us at 910-343-1138 or email us today at coastline@whqr.org. Professor Chris Fonville, just before we went to break, you were talking about the fact that the people who want to see these monuments preserved in the public spaces mm-hmm. where they stand see these as representations of state history and personal history as well.
Yes.
In your editorial, you felt the need to unpack why slavery really is at the heart of what caused the Civil War, which was interesting to me, because are there historians out there who have any credibility who would dispute that fact at this point?
Well, in the academic community, I'm not sure how much credibility they would have. But there are historians, quotation marks, and heritage groups that do believe that the war was principally about taxes and tariffs and states' rights. And I point out in my op-ed that, you know, by states' rights, the South meant their right to protect and defend slavery in perpetuity. You know, on the other hand, I think the statues really should serve as a teaching tools for us to remind us, to teach us, to guide us about our history, the good, the bad, and the ugly. More times than not, our history has been good, but it's also been bad and it's been ugly, and we should never forget that. And I also am a little concerned about this unwillingness to share the public spaces with people who have different political and cultural views. So that, in my view, by removing these statues, the opponents are basically shaping the world in their image and denying the right of those who disagree with them politically, ideologically, to have symbols of their past, the good and the bad.
Professor Monica Gisalfi, I want to ask you about the protesters, because the toppling of Silent Sam was emblematic of the side that says these memorials just have no place in public spaces because of what they represent. Some people describe the protesters as a rampaging mob. Some people describe them as a well-organized strategic band of protesters who sort of faked out the police on campus with what they were doing. What is that side seeing when they look at a statue like Silent Sam?
Well, we need to first place the removal, the students' removal of Silent Sam in its historical context. And it's been for over 60 years, since 1955, that students at UNC Chapel Hill have been calling for the removal of Silent Sam. So there's a long history of calling for the removal of this monument. And these are students who made clear that their institution had fallen short. And so they took actions to remove the statue. We value freedom. We value democracy. We value civil disobedience. And this was an act of civil disobedience. And again, these are students who believe their university had fallen short and hadn't given them a seat at the table to determine what monuments exist on their campus.
What do we know, though, about the student body at UNC, for instance, when we're talking about Chapel Hill right now, in terms of, you know, is this a vocal minority? Was this a majority of the student body? If we value the democratic process, is that a way to handle it if people don't accede to your point of view, your wishes?
Well, when we think about the democratic process, again, I want to go back to this idea that we as Americans, we value democracy, we value freedom, and on top of that, we value civil disobedience. So Americans, when they find laws to be unjust, when they find laws to be anti-democratic, they engage in civil disobedience. And these students find the 2015 law to be unjust and undemocratic, and they took action against the legislature's 2015 law.
Yeah, but shouldn't civil disobedience be peaceful? Was that not an act of destruction of public property against state law? In other words, they took it into their own hands to destroy public property. And I'll tell you, to a person on the commission, regardless of our political leanings, we were very much opposed to that. There is a certain process, democratic process, that should be adhered to. And you don't resort to violence and destruction of public property to do that.
Well,
if you don't like the law, you change the law.
Yeah, I certainly agree. I think, though, that the students believed that the democratic process had failed. That's what I would imagine for them, right? If you've been petitioning for 60 years for a monument to come down, and university officials and state officials haven't listened to that protest, then I imagine that you feel as though you've exhausted your options.
And for people who haven't followed this national debate for the last couple of years and don't know the history of the Confederate monuments, I think this is something we need to establish. Monica Gisalfi, these monuments didn't go up right after the Civil War ended, for the most part. They went up in the early part of the 20th century. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Well, Chris already pointed to this. They were erected, so Confederate monuments were erected for the most part between about 1890 and 1920. And they were erected to celebrate the Confederacy and to legitimize white supremacy and the Jim Crow regime in the American South that emerged from the 1890s onward. They were monuments that were erected to reinforce the Jim Crow order, disenfranchisement, segregation, lynching, and racial terror. How do we know that they were erected for this purpose? We know because they said so. In 1913, Silent Sam was erected on UNC's campus, and at the unveiling, Confederate veteran and UNC trustee Julian Carr gave a speech praising the Confederate Army. So this is the speech that he gave in 1913, essentially dedicating the monument. And here is what he had to say. Do you mind if I quote very, very briefly from the speech?
Go ahead.
He said, so this is again Julian Carr, Confederate veteran and UNC trustee, in 1913 gave a speech and said, "The present generation scarcely takes note of what the Confederate soldier meant to the welfare of the Anglo-Saxon race. Their courage and steadfastness, saved the very life of the Anglo-Saxon race in the South when the bottom rail was on top all over the southern states, and today, as a consequence, the purest strain of the Anglo-Saxon is to be found in the 13 southern states. Praise God." So again, we have this, here is this historical evidence. How do we know that these were monuments to white supremacy? We know this because those who erected these monuments tell us that.
We had a call. Bob from Carolina Beach says these monuments are not referenced by the correct categories. These monuments are not about slavery, and they should stay up. Greg from Wilmington says a lot of people think this is about heritage. They don't put themselves in the shoes of people who were enslaved. History is one thing. Statues place a person on a pedestal, someone who we praise. They can't place themselves in another perspective. And I sort of feel like that's the crux of the emotional part of this debate, is that the people who, as Monica just said, David Ruffin, Chris Fonville, these monuments represent the idea of white supremacy as an abiding concept that needs to be upheld and maintained. And that's directly at odds with what this country supposedly is about.
Well, one of our resolutions spoke exactly to that, to recontextualize that, to bring that whole issue of Mr. Carr's repugnant statement of dedication to Silent Sam to the history of and the context of that. Mm-hmm. I just believe that taking monuments down in total is a denial at some level of somehow we pretend. I made in my own personal statement an aside about a debate I had in 1967 with a German student my age who seemingly did not know about Adolf Hitler.
Tell us about that.
It was something that just completely I didn't think about it so much until this environment, and that was I was over there between high school and college and had literally a contemporaneous age student get in my face about it. There was a race riot that had occurred in Tampa or St. Pete. And we were reading it in the International Herald Tribune. And we were sleeping in a large room together with a lot of students, right? And he said, "How could you possibly defend your region and your country's race relations?" And I took it and I took it and I finally just had to drop the Hitler card on him. And I said, "Look, where do you have the moral high ground given the history of your..." And his escape to that was that we are not allowed to talk about Hitler. His name doesn't appear in any of our textbooks. There are no museums. We just know we lost the war. But I think that proves my whole point, that we just can't pretend to take down the ugly part of history and this assume that it didn't exist. And that was really the heart of our third resolution, was to do everything we could to recontextualize, to bring the perspective of what these monuments mean. It's not just leaving them up to memorialize.
And so Katie from Wilmington says, other countries do not commemorate their wrongs. Take Nazi Germany, for example. The government should have no hand in preserving these monuments. So David Ruffin, you're saying that by taking them down, we're actually removing potential teaching tools, removing reminders of an ugly part of
Absolutely.
American history?
I'm not a professional historian like the two distinguished peers I have on this program today, but every instinct in me says that's part of what history is about, the ability to recognize mm-hmm. what went down before and what went down in an ugly way, and let's talk about that. Again, the other side for me is not academic. It's very gut political to me, and that is I've lived a life of observing politics, particularly in the last 25 years in this country, that if I win, you lose. And part of our process in this was, frankly, to to walk away from that dynamic and put something on the table that spoke to the broad middle that I believe, frankly, are starved for attention. And the polar opposites don't care about those people in the middle because that's just the way they operate. But I, frankly, am very proud to have tried to work something out that is more rational and compromising in this, in a very, very difficult subject as this.
A couple of things. Monica and I have a, well,
Chris Fonville.
My former colleague, Jared Tanney at the university, we were talking about this controversial subject one day, and he said, you know, if they took down every monument in Europe to people who were anti-Semitic, including Martin Luther, by the way, there would be no monuments in Europe. And so we were trying to find a fair and reasonable compromise, keeping them up, contextualizing them, insisting, of course, that the legislature, without delay, move to erect additional statues to ethnic minorities who were contributors during the Civil War period, starting with African Americans. But they should be used as teaching tools. Just because someone is offended by something doesn't necessarily mean that they should be removed, obliterated. They should be used to teach us about our history, the good and, again, the good and the bad.
Monica.
And by the way, 80% of the respondents, either to our public forums or to the public portal on the Department of Cultural and Natural Resources website, were totally against relocating or removing them.
The public was given a chance to weigh in and provide comments.
We held public forums, and then they could voice their opinion on a public portal on the Department of, it's actually Natural and Cultural Resources Department now. And more than 80% were against removing them.
Monica Gisolfi.
Well, so to follow up on Chris's point and this question of, are we erasing history by removing the monuments? I think that we can approach that question in three ways. First of all, the monuments don't teach us history. They honor and glorify individuals and movements and groups of people. So we don't go to these monuments to learn American history or learn Civil War history. Secondly, do we need these monuments in public spaces to teach Southern history? No, of course not. I teach history here at UNCW. Yesterday I was teaching about the Jim Crow era and the rise of the building of these monuments. Do I need a monument to Silent Sam? Do I need the Silent Sam monument sitting in the middle of UNC campus? No. I can use an image. I can use text from the Julian Carr speech to explain and contextualize this monument.
Although you do use these monuments as teaching tools since they're there.
Yes, certainly. I use photographs of the monuments.
But did you not say when you did your tours you used them as teaching tools
yes.
as well?
But I think we have to sort of think about the public sphere. And I can teach about these monuments by using photographs of these monuments. I don't need, and I think we don't need, monuments to the Confederacy to teach about the Confederacy or even to teach about Jim Crow. We have to think about North Carolina citizens and what are we communicating with these monuments. At the end of the day, these monuments honor and glorify, whether we like it or not, whether this history is bad or good, these monuments honor and glorify the Confederacy. So I think that's what we need to think about in public space. Do we want monuments that glorify and honor the Confederacy in our public space?
Well, let's take a closer look then at the resolution that the commission approved, talking about additional signage and other monuments that would go up honoring people of African American heritage. And let's see, we have a question from Monica Gisolfi. You're going to probably pronounce his name better than I will. Kenneth Shefsiak?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. He says, I have a question. He is also in the history department at UNCW. For Dr. Fonville and Mr. Ruffin, in reference to the interpretive signs the commission recommends for placement near the monuments on Capitol grounds, the resolution indicates the signs will provide a balanced context and accounting of the monument's erection in their time in political history. My question is in regard to the comment about balanced context. Historically, they were erected as an attempt to strengthen white supremacy in the formative years of Jim Crow, which both Professors Fonville and Gisalfi have explained. To provide balance, is the commission recommending the monuments be interpreted as having been erected as something other than symbols of white supremacy? Any interpretive signs that do not condemn those who supported the Confederacy and honored it after the Civil War will tacitly suggest the people whom these monuments celebrate and the cause are still worthy of celebration.
Well, I think that the monuments also represent the arguably the worst time in the history of North Carolina. It was a disaster for the state of North Carolina. And that in of itself, I think, begs further context, further explanation. Not just taking them down. Again, the very fact that we have been paralyzed through state leadership to go ahead and get alternative monuments to African Americans and to civil rights progress, in my opinion, has further made this a much more hot-button issue because we had no progress in the last number of years, even though there were serious initiatives being attempted to get memorials to African Americans. They were stymied by either the purse or through moratoriums imposed largely through the General Assembly. But my point there is we do have, I think, a challenge to tell the whole story and not just remove and then pretend that it doesn't exist. I grew up in a small town that 60% of the population were African Americans. I've taken people through my small town and pointed to a theater that had colored entrance on the that people in my youth had to go through a colored entrance. I don't want that memory ever removed because that tells me a lesson that I would never want to repeat.
And when we come back from this break, I want to find out how receptive you think the legislature will be to the commission's resolutions. We're talking about the role of Confederate memorials in public spaces, the recent resolutions passed by the State Historical Commission. You can call us on this Wednesday at 910-343-1138 or email us at coastline@whqr.org. When we come back from this short break, we'll get to more listener questions and comments. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn for Coastline. Listening to Coastline, I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. A group of protesters pulled down Silent Sam last week on the UNC campus. 2 days later, the North Carolina Historical Commission passed three resolutions detailing next steps where three Confederate monuments stand on Capitol grounds. To help us unpack the complexity of those resolutions and the process leading up to it, including the breadth of the authority that the commission had to issue directives, we have the chair of that commission with us today, David Ruffin, and UNCW Professor Emeritus Chris Fonville, who is also a member of the State Historical Commission. Monica Gisalfi, Associate Professor of American History at UNCW, is also with us today. And you can reach us on this Wednesday by calling us at 910-343-1138 or emailing us at coastline@whqr.org. It's the last segment, so just a few minutes left to get your question or comment in. David Ruffin, chair of the North Carolina Historical Commission, just before we went to break, you were talking about the importance of adding context to the three Confederate monuments that exist on state Capitol grounds. How receptive do you think the legislature will be to the resolutions passed by your commission? It's interesting to me that one of the resolutions had to do with Governor Cooper and members of the General Assembly do this toot sweet.
Yes. Well, to be honest with you, the group of our commission and the committee more specifically felt that we were coming out of a voluntary private sector academia point of view and frankly taking the heat on this issue. But we didn't neglect that. We said, well, in the current environment that we're in, it's left to us to make recommendations, and we did that. I was heartened, frankly, that immediately after our recommendations were made and the resolutions were passed, that President Pro Tem Phil Berger made a statement very quickly that he was, quote, words to the effect, ready to roll up his sleeves and get going on changing the balance. I would hope that is indeed occurring, because honestly, it is now, in my opinion, completely up to our state leadership, Democrats, Republicans, all to solve this problem, because it is, I think that was the spirit, Chris, of our recommendations.
So this will take funding as well, which takes an appetite for it. Do you get the sense that the state legislature has the appetite?
I can only take them at their word. I'm certainly aware of Mr. Berger's influence in the General Assembly, and he certainly stated that he was willing to do that.
And I personally
pledged
$500 toward that effort so that it could be a public-private venture to erect statues to other people, ethnic minorities from the Civil War and Reconstruction era. And by the way, I just want to say one last thing. David and I know Monica too, have spoken to hundreds and hundreds of people, mostly listening to people, over this very sensitive and controversial issue over the last year. I have spoken with no one who idolizes the Confederacy, no one who idolizes the symbols to the Confederacy, and no one who lives in the past. But clearly the past is important to them, and these statues are important to them, but principally as teaching tools. And we believe that by providing greater historical context, that we can further that educational opportunity for North Carolinians. People are pretty smart. They know what the Confederacy represented. They know when these statues were put up what the message was, for the most part.
Do you think that there are some people who want to preserve these statues who really do adhere to the ideals of white supremacy but are smart enough to know that they can't say that out loud in public forums?
I have never spoken with anyone who sees them that way. I have not spoken to a single person who says, you know, I idolize the Confederacy. I idolize these statues. No one. Now, maybe David has, maybe Monica has, but I have not. But I can't speak for everyone.
Monica Gisolfi.
Well, I wanted to speak to two points. First of all, David made the point about Jim Crow signs and the importance of seeing Jim Crow signs. Those are very different from historical monuments. And I think one of the things that we need to remember is that the monuments themselves, Silent Sam and the three Confederate monuments that sit on the Capitol grounds, they actually erase history. So they don't teach us history. They erase history. On the Capitol grounds, there's a monument to Confederate women. What history does it erase? It erases the history of Unionist North Carolina women, women who broke with the Confederacy, sided with the Union Army, began a sizable Unionist movement in Western North Carolina. These were women who staged bread riots during the Civil War. Erasing history, back to this idea, what history does it erase? It erases the history of the hundreds of thousands of African American North Carolinians who changed the course of the Civil War. It was slaves, North Carolinian enslaved people who ran to Union lines, who out of their love of freedom ran to Union lines, enlisted in the Union Army, and fought to change the course of the war. And so as we look at these monuments that are up on the Capitol grounds, they don't teach us history the way that having Jim Crow signs still around teach us history and remind us of the past. Rather, they erase history. I also want to speak to this idea, because both David and Chris have alluded to this idea that one of the solutions is to erect monuments to African Americans. And we've seen that it seems as though there isn't the money and perhaps not the political will to do this. So we're sort of facing a conundrum.
Well, he was actually just saying
yes,
that may be a different story now that the commission has issued its
right.
recommendations.
Yes, yes. And so I want to speak to that because I think that, you know, the commission has said that they advocate erecting a monument to African Americans on the Capitol grounds. And I think that this presents a number of problems. First of all, it sets up what we would call a false equivalence. Basically, you put a statue to African Americans next to a statue of the Confederacy, and you what you then imply and suggest is that there are two sides to every story, and there are good actors on both sides and good people on both sides. Would it make sense? Let's say the North Carolina Historical Commission proposes to put up a monument to enslaved North Carolinians who, again, changed the course of the war, turned their political will to be free into a political problem for the federal government. What would it mean? What would we be telling our children if we put up a monument to enslaved North Carolinians who fought for their freedom? What would it mean, and what would we be telling our children if we put up that monument right next to a monument to the Confederacy? I think that we would be setting up this statement that there were good people on both sides, both causes were just. And we know, we know that's not the case.
But this isn't what I'm hearing from the resolution by the State Historical Commission. What I'm hearing, and correct me if I'm wrong, is that when you're putting up signage around these monuments saying the Confederacy represented an effort to protect the institution of slavery, which was, I think, David Ruffin, you said in your statement, you referred to this as America's original sin. And I think there's a book that's been written about that, how America still has some work to do on healing that wound. But if you've got signs up around those monuments saying this is what this represented, then you don't have an equivalence, do you, with a memorial to? Let's let David Ruffin address this.
Well, I think that the concern I have with this, and this goes to the comment I made earlier, is that if you pull these down, what does that leave you with? Rage? We've already been threatened with having massive Confederate flags put on every interstate highway in this state. In fact, at some level, I even told our committee members that said, I'm a believer that when you win, you lose, and you lose, you win. And at some level, the extreme Confederate supporters almost want us to pull these monuments down because this will give them fuel for their rage and their hate. And then we'll all have to suffer by looking at Confederate flags bedecking the entirety of this state. There's a political side of this that, in my opinion, we have to be realistic about, and that you just can't, for theoretical purposes, say, well, these were monuments to evil people. It represented a disaster for this state. There were good people brought up in arguably a bad cause. But that's what history teaches us in retrospect.
I don't consider my great-great-grandfather an evil person simply because he lived at that time. And I don't see how these
He fought for the Confederacy?
Yes, he did.
And he fought to protect slavery.
And he indirectly, at least, he fought to defend slavery, absolutely. But I don't see how the Confederate statues erase history. I will fully admit that the greater story of African Americans and their contributions during the war era, and maybe Native Americans and Unionists, absolutely, need to be told. But I don't see how the statues themselves erase history. We just need to add to the history, and we need to contextualize the statues that are already up.
Monica.
But we need to keep in mind that these are monuments that are in public spaces.
Why not? Why can't people share the public space with people who have a different ideological, political, and cultural view than you do?
Well, but I think we have to think about a place like UNC Chapel Hill and what it means for 60 years for students and staff and faculty who are African American to walk by those statues, that statue, and likewise to think about what it means to citizens of this state who are African American who have to walk by the statues on the Capitol grounds. These aren't simply tools that we can learn history from. They're not simply tools that we can contextualize.
And that point, Monica Gisolfi, gets right to the heart of the emotional argument on that side. And it's something that I think it was the mayor of New Orleans brought up when he was talking about pulling down monuments to the Confederacy. in that city. And one of the things he, I think, said was, if you have a young boy, let's say, who's 5 or 6 years old, a child of color, what message are you as a city sending to that child about his worth and his potential? And I think, is what you're getting at. What does this say to people of color?
Yes, and that's something that we should be concerned about. I understand that David and Chris are concerned with the political ramifications of removing these monuments. But I think we have reason. If we look at what's happened across the country, if we look at Baltimore, if we look at New Orleans, if we look at the University of Texas at Austin, these monuments have come down. And so we have reason to believe that, and we have reason to be hopeful that these monuments will come down. The composition of the North Carolina Historical Commission will change. The composition of the state legislature will change. We have a governor who's calling for the relocation of these monuments. I think we have to really focus on the fact that these communicate ideals, whether we like it or not, whether we agree with the history or not. These monuments celebrate the Confederacy, and so we communicate that we too celebrate the Confederacy if we leave these in public spaces.
And I need to get to some listener comments here. Alina of Wilmington called in and said, not all history is memorialized. Why do we have to memorialize this? I think we're on the wrong side by glorifying slavery with these statues, not questioning the valiance, she says, of the soldiers who fought, but they were on the wrong side. Bo from Wilmington says, for the third resolution, what kind of signage are they envisioning? Exact quotes from the people in the monument? For example, would we here add signage to George Davis? And he's referring to that statue of George Davis that sits at the entrance to downtown Wilmington, that he said the Confederacy should secede from the Union. Is that what we're talking about, Chris Fonville?
Well, we haven't gotten to the specifics of the committee that would determine what the signage would be. We just offered resolutions that that historical context should be provided. That is yet to be determined, but we will get to that. But just back to Monica's point, I don't understand, again, that there's only one way to look at the world, that some people want the world to look and sound like only they want it to look and sound like. And I just don't understand this unwillingness to share the public spaces with people who may not agree with your political, your ideological, and your cultural views.
Okay, so I realize we want to go around and around on this, but we're covering the same ground, and I need to get to...
I just want to make one quick point, and I think Chris and I agree on this. We as Americans, we value freedom, we value democracy. Do these monuments memorialize those values? And no, they don't, unfortunately. I wish they did, but they don't celebrate democracy. They don't celebrate freedom.
Charles from Supply says, I think the statues should be erected to the men of the Confederacy who did not own slaves. These men were conned into fighting for the Confederacy. Bob of Wilmington says, monuments are celebratory. This is not appropriate. There is no debate on this. Educational context will not do anything. And Brian of Wilmington says, I'm a 49-year-old, the last generation to be influenced by the greatest generation. These statues show the path not to take. Auschwitz stands up to remind everyone what happened. The taking down of these monuments is equal to burning books. Chris Fonville, you said in your editorial in the Star News today, this process took a personal toll on you. Can you tell us about that?
It's been difficult. We deliberated long and hard for 11 months. I received a lot of criticism from people on both ends of the spectrum. And
the commission was threatened with legal action, too.
Yes, we were. And that was one thing that I brought up in my op-ed that we really didn't talk about in our meetings. But there is an economic element involved in this. It will cost the state more than $1 million to relocate these statues, deal with lawsuits, whereas an investment of less than $10,000 will provide historical context to them as an educational opportunity for our citizens.
And that's this edition of Coastline. David Ruffin, Monica Gisolfi, Chris Fonville, thank you all so much for being with us today.
That was a good debate.
Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caitlin Freund is our webmaster. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. If you missed part of this episode, look for it at WHQR.org, get the podcast, or find it on the HQR app, or just tune in for the rebroadcast Sunday afternoon at 3. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.